Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Sarah Gustavus. If you've driven down Central Avenue in Albuquerque recently or around downtown, you've surely noticed some things have changed. New apartment buildings are going up, new businesses, and even a remodel of the old De Anza Motor Lodge in the Nob Hill neighborhood. What do you think about those changes? Are they good or bad for the character of those neighborhoods? Or are you reserving judgment until you have more information? Today, we're spending an hour on urban development, particularly the redevelopment of areas of Albuquerque that are getting attention and investment from developers. How do you want to see the city of Albuquerque change? What would ideal development in the city look like to you? What would a healthy community look like? Join us today by calling 277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org. I have several guests in studio today. I'm going to start by introducing Enrique Cardiel, Urban Health Extension Coordinator with Bernalillo County and a resident of the International District. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Deacon Robert V. Hill, a Borelis Community Coalition board member and lifelong resident of the Borelis neighborhood. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
I want to start with you, Deacon V. Hill. How have you seen your neighborhood change in the past 5 to 10 years?
Well, we're in the pocket of poverty, first of all, and new faces are coming into the community. That word gentrification has been around for some time now, but it can be a scary word for the community, but there's good. Even though we're in the pocket of poverty, at one time the community was thriving. There was businesses all around the community, family-owned grocery stores. Those went away for some time, and they seem to be coming back, which is nice. It's nice to see businesses coming back into the community for those that don't have transportation.
And is the church still an important part of the community?
Of course. Church has been around just as long as the community has been around. And it serves as a place for people who, let's just say, immigrant community, maybe just need someone to walk with them and help them, but also for the community residents as a place to gather.
Yeah. Enrique, what do you think? What have you seen change in the International District?
Well, in the last 5 to 10 years, there's been an increase of homeless folks that are visible without much effort. You're driving around and you see folks, or if you walk around, you're going to bump into folks who are living on the street in some way or another. And I think that's indicative of the lack of investment that has happened in the community. Even with ART, originally there was no stop really for the International District. The intention wasn't there. They even had a meeting at the Ellis Hoppes building on the State Fair when there was no proposed stop for that area. So I asked the question, how is it that the neediest community on this section doesn't have a stop, and you're going to have a meeting here to talk about the impact of this when really you're just flying through the community? And I think really the concern for people is people who are residents, I'm going to speak as a resident, are really not wanting a bunch of outside investment. We don't want a giant corporation to come in and, do whatever they do to communities. But the trick is, how do we get community folks to be the ones who invest in the neighborhood, become the owners of the neighborhood? And that's a difficult thing when you have a high rate of poverty, high amount of homelessness. But that's the kind of thing I think it would be beneficial, is how can city, county, state, invest in residents so that residents are owners of their own neighborhood.
And in the past 10 years, there was an official name change, the designation of the International District. Do you think that's changed the conversation about that community investment and people coming together?
I think it's kind of poked at that conversation. Some folks see the name change as like part of gentrification, and some folks see the name change as a way of the community having some say in their own kind of designation, right? The other name that people use for the neighborhood didn't come from residents saying, hey, I want to live in a neighborhood called this. And I think that that's really an issue, and I think that's really kind of pointing to some things, because it really was residents that came forward and said, look, we don't want to be called this anymore. We don't want to raise our children in a neighborhood called this. Call us something else. And there was meeting, and there was multiple names thrown out. And so I think that's one thing. But definitely, so there are folks who didn't want anything to do with our neighborhood, just suddenly wanted to be part of the International District because that sounds cool. And there's people who live within the International District who don't want to have anything to do with it. And, you know, so I think it's just the reality of how do you change things, you know, in a very large community. It's the most densely populated community in the state. And so you're going to have lots of different opinions. But really, people, there is not consensus, but there's a lot of agreement that people want, like, community control.
Interesting. Yeah, and this is a really big and complex conversation we're trying to get at this hour, but there's a time for us to talk about a lot of these things. How have you seen your neighborhood change in the past 5 to 10 years? Do you want to share your story today? Call 277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org. I'd like to welcome two guests now. We have Rania Aaron-Foyt, a professor in the Community and Regional Planning Department at UNM. Welcome, Rania.
Thank you. Good morning.
And you're also on the executive committee of the Albuquerque Affordable Housing Coalition.
Yes.
We're going to get into housing this hour. We also have Dan Majewski, an urban planning, mobility, and communications consultant, and he lives downtown.
Hi.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Rania, I want to ask you, gentrification, we've already heard this word. You know, it gets thrown around a lot. How do urban planning professionals define gentrification?
Well, I would say that there's a few, few things that people mean when they're talking about gentrification. And one is that we're most often talking about a neighborhood that had experienced some disinvestment and then is seeing some reinvestment, but often with new residents, as we've already heard, coming in. We often think of it as like more white people coming in. It doesn't have to be that, but that's often what we see. And people particularly with higher incomes. But then it also leads to a number of changes. I mean, of course, we want everyone to be doing well and to be well served in their neighborhood. So that's not the question. But oftentimes, like, businesses can get displaced or residents can get displaced if rents go up a lot, and so that people aren't able to afford to live in the neighborhood anymore. So displacement is one of the really big concerns. But something else that we often talk about is, like, social or political displacement. You can be living in a neighborhood, but if, you know, the shop that you could buy a sheet cake for $4 is replaced with a coffee house that sells slices of cake for $4, they're serving really different people. And if your council member or police start, you know, responding to newcomers who might also be scared of, you know, longtime residents and not, you know, that there can be tensions within that and people can be displaced within neighborhoods that, you know, even if they're still there. So I think that when we're thinking about it, it's definitely that change, like the, kind of increased rents, increased property value, people with higher incomes moving in, not just everybody's incomes increasing. But really, you know, the worst aspects of it are people being displaced in one way or another.
Dan, is this a conversation that you have with folks? You grew up here, you work in planning. Do you find yourself talking about the idea of gentrification a lot?
Yeah. Gentrification comes up a lot. And I like how Rania talked about displacement as really being the fundamental element of displacement that I think needs to be paid the most attention to. I think the challenge I've had in the past is gentrification means different things to different people, so sometimes it's hard to figure out, you know, what exactly we need to be working on, especially like if you're coming from the city perspective. But really, displacement is the biggest challenge, both residents and businesses. But fortunately, there's a lot of great models in other cities and in our own community that we can use to tackle these problems.
Deacon Vigil, when you mentioned gentrification at the beginning of the hour, when you hear people saying that, what do you think that they're talking about?
Well, change. You know, change. Change is something that is hard for some people, especially those of us that have grown up in the pocket of poverty and know the community as we know it. You know, this displacement issue is a very important thing to discuss. I mean, we as a community have had to fight just to have a voice, and which is important. And thank God, you know, we have had a voice in Barelas. But I can remember a time when they were looking at condemning some homes for the sake of economic development, and these people were not notified. So you know, we stood up as a community and fought back, and these people were not displaced. But it's a constant, for lack of better words, it's a constant battle. I mean, I think that that you can have development, but you also have to empower the community to have a voice and to try not to displace people. You know, affordable housing, some communities don't want to talk about that. Developers that have come in to Barelas, all they have in mind is, you know, what do we get out of this? And we've sat at the table with some great developers, so we thought. But when we brought up affordable housing or just certain things that just didn't kind of coincide with what they were thinking, the talks kind of fell apart.
Mm. Enrique, do you want to add anything on this?
Yeah, I think we've had similar things where people don't want affordable housing. People say, well, you know, if you provide affordable housing, you'll bring more poor people in the community. There's, unfortunately, a lot of poor people in the community. And the displacement, back during a previous mayor's administration, they knocked down a couple of blocks in the International District in Trimble. And those folks were moved. They were given some support to move. And when we asked the question, well, are they going to be, like, first on the list to move back? They're like, oh, well, we didn't keep track to contact those folks, right? So that was, like, blatant displacement of, like, two whole blocks of people in the community. Like, kids that my kids were growing up with suddenly lived on the west side, right, because their block was gone. And I think that without any forethought, something that's supposedly improving the community could very easily just be harmful displacement and then will cause resistance to any other changes going on.
Rania, what ways can move, you know, if things need to be changed, you know, a new development needs to happen or there needs to be some new housing, in what ways can a city work well with a community to address those concerns?
Well, I think some of the things we're seeing here are really important and we have to continue to prioritize them, you know, that we are working with people who live in communities to improve their communities and not just thinking of it in terms of bringing in outside development. I think that we should be thinking about how do we have, you know, retain affordable housing, keep people in their housing, like really work to anything that avoids displacement, avoids people being evicted, you know, as neighborhoods change and somebody who owns property might decide they want to sell and start putting pressure on their current tenants to move out. So anything that avoids that. And I do think we need to really pay attention to affordable housing, to all the tools that we can put in place now that can anticipate like more rapid growth in the future, something like inclusionary zoning that may not kick in right now if we don't see very much development, but at a time it might start happening, we already have a tool in place to try to make sure that there are, you know, in a sense, housing for everybody who lives in a place now, even if newcomers come in. I think that that's a priority. But I think also the listening matters a lot. Like social and political displacement are real. People stop feeling like their neighborhood is their neighborhood. And they start feeling policed and watched by their neighbors rather than feeling like their neighbors are their friends and community. And I think that that also is about really saying, what are we prioritizing here? We're prioritizing, you know, making sure that everybody in our neighborhoods is thriving and what we have to do that. And I will say that the, you know, like right now, the city trying to focus on, say, hey, we have areas we know haven't been, you know, haven't been invested in the last years with the city priority and trying to kind of change that pattern is really important. But in, you know, in dialogue with residents, you know, so that it doesn't lead to gentrification of some neighborhoods.
Are you listening today and you want to add something to this? How would you like to talk with the city about development? How would you like to be part of the conversation, part of the planning for your neighborhood? The number to call is 277-5866. And also, if you have any questions about urban planning, how these decisions made, how things work, call in with those questions and we'll try to get you an answer. Again, the number is 277-5866. We have an email comment from John. He says there have been lots of different efforts around urban planning in Albuquerque over the years, planned growth strategy, integrated development ordinances, public infrastructure, impact fees. But he says sprawl continues and not much has changed there. People who want a walkable community still leave. Another email comment from Vinny. She says, density doesn't always lead to affordability. She points to Seattle, Denver, Portland, and says she wants to see Albuquerque do things differently and to focus especially on access for people with disabilities. How do you want to see the city of Albuquerque change and make sure that it's inclusive of people as it changes? Again, the number 277-5866. We want to hear from you today. We're going to go to a quick break. We'll be right back.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
KUNM needs people with good handwriting and a pleasant phone voice to help answer phones from early morning to late evening during our fall fundraiser, September 22nd to September 28th. We provide video training you watch from home, plus free parking, free CDs, lunch from House of Bread, food all day. It's very easy to sign up. Go to KUNM.org and click Help Answer Phones. Questions? Call 277-4516. Thanks.
In the early 1980s, Charlie Harmon answered a help wanted ad. The job? Personal assistant to Leonard Bernstein.
I had no idea what I was getting into.
Coming up, Charlie Harmon shares what it was like to work for Leonard Bernstein on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Sarah Gustavus, and we are talking today about urban development, those new developments in cities, especially in Albuquerque this hour. We want to hear from you. The number is 277-5866. Let's go now to Sarah in Albuquerque. Sarah, what changes do you want to see?
Hi, am I on?
You
can
are. You are. Welcome.
Oh, okay. Sometimes the other shows, it clicks. You know what? I have been noticing all of the pedestrian and bicycle safety street design in all of our streets. And, you know, I would like to see more of the talk lights, you know, the pedestrian crossings that they're going to put in the Cleveland Middle School. And it actually stops the car. And I think they're looking at maybe 200 schools here in Albuquerque. And out of those, they want to pick where it's necessary. But I love the hawk lights, and if we could just keep on with the safer street design, it might help reduce our pedestrian fatalities.
And then I was even
told that Lennon Cole is going to turn into a two-car lane street instead of a one-way. So I think that might slow the cars down.
Hmm. Sarah, thanks for your call today. Dan, I know that, you know, street design is an important issue to you. Can you comment on some of these things?
The hawk lights are a great tool. I agree with Sarah. I think it'd be great to see more of them in the community, especially in communities like the International District where, you have a much higher pedestrian fatality rate. And lead and coal going two-way, I know it's just a conversation right now, and it would definitely slow speeds, but I think we're a long way from that actually happening.
What are some other strategies that can be used to make streets safer for pedestrians and cyclists?
The quickest, cheapest tool is that's typically called a road diet, but I don't really like that term. I prefer maybe road right sizing. A great example of that is what they just did on Girard right next to the KUNM offices here, where they reduced the lanes, they added bike lanes, and by doing that, it slows down traffic, creates more space for more different types of road users, and increases safety, reduces speeds. So, yeah, road right sizing.
I know some people, they hate the idea of reducing speeds, though. What's the argument for that?
Well, the argument is that traffic violence affects everyone. It really doesn't matter how old you are, how poor or wealthy you are. It really touches every part of our community. Of course, it hits our lower income communities hardest. But truly, it affects everyone. And slowing down speed citywide can save a lot of lives. For example, last year, more people died in traffic violence than died in homicides. You know, we talk a lot about our homicide rate in Albuquerque, but our traffic violence rate is just as high and is just as much of a destructive force in our community.
I'm hearing you use the word traffic violence. I haven't heard that much. Why that word? Why is that important to you?
I think putting the word violence in there, making people understand that it's a violent act when cars hit each other, when cars are hitting people. You know, I think we use the term pedestrian too much. We use the term cyclist too much. These are people we're talking about. These are people in our community. These are mothers, fathers, daughters, brothers, and it has huge, huge impact on our community.
Renya, did you want to add something quickly to that?
I just wanted to add that I think that also that question of making our streets accessible is a huge one, is that our sidewalks are almost impossible to navigate if you're in a wheelchair. So people who are rolling along the sidewalk, the driveway cuts, you know, are really precarious. There's utility poles in the middle of sidewalks. Sidewalks are narrow. People can't get around.
Yeah, we have a caller who wants to speak specifically to that. Stephanie, what comment did you want to make about that issue of sidewalks?
Hi, that's so funny that you just brought that up because that was what I was calling in about. So I have a friend, I was living in Portland, Oregon, and I have a friend who has cerebral palsy who's in a wheelchair, and we were just talking about how the curb cuts are so great in Portland, Oregon, because they have the infrastructure. And we were just talking about how I would love to get him out to Albuquerque. And he was saying, how's the public transportation and this and that? And I kind of shared with him a little bit about the art and what we're doing there. And I've actually taken the bus myself. And so the bus system is pretty good. But in terms of getting around in a wheelchair, it's very, very difficult and almost scary because I was looking around and there's not very many curb cuts, just like the woman was saying before. But I also wanted to speak into more housing availability for people with disabilities and also seniors. That's a big issue right now that we were also talking about is, are there homes that he could even consider buying. And so he was talking about people who do home modifications. And so that probably is something that is growing and I don't know very much about, but as I understand it, there's only a few people that specialize in home modifications for people who want to still live in their homes who have disabilities and or are seniors. And so that's another thing I'd like to see. So folks with disabilities and also the aging community, which is growing like crazy, would have access to. So that was something I wanted to bring forward.
That's an important point. Thanks for your call today, Stephanie. Renya, how do all these pieces fit together of making sure there's housing and transportation for people at different ages, people with different abilities? It's a really big, big thing for the city to take on.
It is a big thing. And I think that one response to that is that there isn't just one way to approach it. We are a city that developed a lot, you know, since World War II. And so that means we have a lot of what we call single family housing, but we know that people live in it in a lot of different ways. And we could make that easier. We could make it easier to divide singles into doubles. We could make it easier to have accessory dwelling units, you know, to have, you know, family members live in other kind of parts of the house. We could, you know, like there's other things, because one is that we're not going to be a city that becomes really high density with huge high-rise apartments rapidly. I mean, maybe it happens if we start growing faster, but we'll have some housing like that, but that's not what's going to be the majority of our housing. So one is like just more options, like give people the flexibility to think about that. And that doesn't mean that, you know, that we're allowing landlords who aren't responsive and who don't, you know, live in a community to just divide things up and rent them and not take care of them. I mean, we need, accountability around that. But really believe that also residents can make some decisions about how to best live in their house. I mean, having, you know, being able to rent a room or a little unit in your house is actually one really critical way to make housing affordable to people.
Absolutely. Enrique Cardiel, in this issue of sidewalks and safety in streets, you also worked on an initiative called Light the District.
Mm-hmm.
What need did that address?
So one of the concerns people have is just the dark areas of the community. And so even though it was part of the displacement I was talking about earlier, there's been an apartment complex that was put up in one of the blocks, and it's very well lit. And if you walk through the neighborhood at night, like you come to this area that's super well lit, and then you walk past it and it's dark again. And so Light the District, again, was about community control, right? Community folks wanted more lighting, so we're putting up 4x4 poles with solar lights on property where people want that. And it's providing some extra security. People who walk by them and use them, like say they're walking in the morning or late at night, you know, have told us they appreciate having this extra lighting. It's not really a funded project, so we're always trying to figure out how to get more. We've put up 22 lights so far, and we probably have a lot more that we could do. And we're going to keep working at how do we do that. Because it is, it's like the community saying, here's a place we could use some lighting. And we figure out, we've had some support from Presbyterians, some support from other folks. But really, some of it's also been just out of the pockets of people in the community saying, okay, let's invest in our own community.
With the idea that people would get out and walk, get out and talk to people.
Yeah, and people feel safer. You know, there's people who just say, you know, I know if something's going on, I don't feel comfortable, I can walk by the light will turn on, and, you know, I can feel, you know, I can stall there and pretend like I'm doing something and just kind of feel like I'm comfortable.
Yeah. Do you have an idea of something that you think would make your neighborhood safer, make it, give it more of a community feel, things that you and your neighbors would want to invest in? Give us a call and tell us about it. The number is 277-5866. Again, that's 277-5866. I also, the Albuquerque Rapid Transit is part of talking about urban development or redevelopment. I want to talk about that. Could you see yourself giving up a car and riding the ART, or have you already made the leap? What does it take to live without a car in Albuquerque, or to not use a car every day in Albuquerque? Again, the number is 277-5866. Dan Majewski, you want to jump in on this one? How do folks get around if you don't have a car? It's possible, right?
Yeah, no, I've lived in Albuquerque without a car. It is possible. It is challenging, though. You have to, you know, if you have to live close to work, perhaps, or strategically locate next to a bus line that's going to get you to where you need to go. But really, I kind of want to jump back to what Renya was saying about choice and options. I think that's really one of the biggest challenges, not just in our community, but nationwide. I think we've created a system, a regulatory system, that prevents various types of houses from existing that perhaps used to exist. I think there's a lot of well-intentioned regulations that have just made development really, really challenging, and therefore made it so that only people with a lot of capital can do development. Like, we're talking about how can communities develop on their own. Really, as it stands right now, it's very challenging because it's so expensive and challenging, and because of some of our regulations. Just one example is parking. We have this kind of weird relationship with parking in our culture, where we assume that it's kind of a right, that it's going to be quote unquote free, that it's going to be available everywhere. It costs about $5,000 to build a parking space. And if you're talking structured parking, it's anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000. So when our regulations basically force any type of development to include parking, even if there's on-street parking right in front, it increases the cost of the development and therefore increases the cost of those units and therefore makes those units unaffordable to a lot of folks in the community.
When the Central and Texas Clinic went up for UNM, we had to fight really hard to have the on-street parking be counted so that they could have a smaller parking lot.
Right.
You know, so that those are huge issues. It's like you have to include this extra expense all the time if you want to do any development.
And do you think that maybe the folks who, there are a lot of people who do take the bus, especially in the International District, it seems like it's not acknowledging that some of those people don't have cars anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, the assumption is you have cars, and in some way, to be economically functional in Albuquerque, you have to have a car. I mean, it's kind of this strange tension. But as far as I can tell, the International District's one of the most walked, bicycled neighborhoods, you know, and it's not people who are walking or biking for recreation that's their main transportation. And I think acknowledging that and supporting that is really important.
Mm.
Yeah, and if you look at the infrastructure in the International District, it does not at all acknowledge that there's a huge percentage of people walking and biking and using transit. It looks, the infrastructure there, the sidewalks, the streets, they look very similar to other communities where more people are driving. And that's that's a big part of why we see such a high fatality rate for people who are walking and biking in these neighborhoods.
Is that a top priority for the community to kind of address those sidewalks and the safety and that?
Yeah, I think safety in general is always a major priority. And I think people are very aware about people getting hit and people dying. And so I think we work on that a lot. We do different kind of pedestrian safety walks and things to try to bring attention to pedestrian safety. And even with the clinic, again, they were able to put in wider than usual sidewalk. And we were hoping to, like, create a standard where you had a really wide sidewalk where there was trees. And then there was a development immediately across the street right afterwards that said, no, we're not going to do that. And so it's much narrower. You know, but that attempt to create space for the people who, you know, are walking around, not just those of us who are driving.
Mm. Renya Ehrenfoit from UNM and the Affordable Housing Coalition, you're going to need to leave in just a few minutes. I wanted to talk a little more about housing with you. You mentioned changing some of the zoning. What are some other strategies that the city of Albuquerque could be using to ensure that the housing is affordable for everyone?
Well, I think that Dan's point about choice is an important one, is that when we're starting thinking about housing, thinking about a wide range of housing types and really trying to incentivize, like, you know, anything from, you know, apartments in a bigger apartment building to townhouses to allowing, you know, singles to become doubles or secondary dwelling units. I do think, you know, some tools like inclusionary zoning can be good ways of saying if we're going to have big development, some of that we should always be thinking affordability first. But I will just say there's another important piece that we can't get around here is that we have low wages and people don't have enough money for housing, even if the housing isn't expensive. And so we can't lose track of the fact that we're really talking about we need good jobs. Mm-hmm. We need all jobs to be good jobs. You know, people need benefits. People, you know, need decent wages no matter what work they're doing.
So if we think about, you know, if there were, say, some rapid development in Albuquerque, I think that's what makes a lot of people nervous, that displacing people. How could we be ready for that if that did happen to ensure that people who have, you know, are struggling already, you know, wouldn't be struggling even more in that situation?
Well, I certainly think like the just to reiterate the question of really always trying to reduce eviction and displacement. So, you know, let's build on empty lots. Like, let's not demolish existing housing. So that I think that's critical piece of it. But the other piece is, like, with inclusionary zoning, it's a tool that says, you know, that if you're going to have, let's say, a building and it has, you know, 20 units, that 5% or 10% are affordable. And it's just part of it. It gets sort of built in. Or there's other ways, you know, like developers can invest, like pay into the housing trust fund. And so that money can then be used for building new affordable housing. And I think that those tools, if we put them in place now, then, you know, when, like, we're anticipating rapid development. I mean, even if we look at a city like Denver, a decade ago, no one thought Denver, or, you know, 15 years ago, Denver would be growing like it is now. I mean, it was, you know, for a long time, it was a sleepy kind of western, midwestern town or city, you know. And now it's, you know, one of the most rapidly growing cities in the country. And so, you know, we should get ahead of that. The other part is that, you know, something like community land trusts and other ways that, you know, really retaining community control. And, you know, we have one model like the sawmill, and that's one way. But there's also some that are just scattered houses, right? And then you establish community land trust and different houses can, you know, can buy individual houses and then they keep, you know, they stay affordable. People can either rent them or buy them more affordably, but also there is a real emphasis on residents having that kind of control, participating in the governance. And so I think that anything we can do to incentivize that kind of community control is really important.
Enrique, I see you nodding. You think that would work in the International District?
Well, I think that those are good and important steps to look at, and I think that it could work. And I also think citywide, we need to spread affordable housing around, right? I know folks in there are other communities that are better off who are much more adamant and much more capable to fight against affordable housing. And I think on some level, you know, city or local government just needs to say, no, we're going to have this spread around, because part of what happens is we concentrate poverty, right? Part of that is economic segregation. Part of that's, you know, racial segregation. And I think we're at the perfect time to start breaking that down. And I think, it's one of those things that it's got to be done eventually. Might as well start now and make sure that housing is spread out so that it's not this community is pretty much all this income and that community is all that income, while at the same time trying to bring up people's income through better wages, better insurance, better job security, different things like that. And for the International District, that'd be great, right? There are people looking at how to buy apartments and set up specific kind of things. There is a housing cooperative in the International District. So I think the energy is there. It's just being able to tap into the resources that are required. Again, in low-income communities, that's a little bit harder, but their energy is often there.
And what are some other ways that people are coming together to talk about the community? I've seen some activity on Facebook of meetings and walks and conversations.
Yeah, there's just a wide variety of things. I mean, there's a lot of good work being done with youth, getting youth to talk about their community. There's work being done around gardening. There's we've had Ciclovia last year. We'll have Ciclovia this year. I don't know if we'll do it again the following year to get people to talk around pedestrian safety. We have we're doing the syringe pickup, which really is about community control of environmental health, but also creates the conversation to talk about addiction and addiction services and mental health services that are needed. And that, again, that idea that if you bring services here, you're going to bring people with those issues. But all you got to do is look around, and the people with issues live here already, and they deserve close access to those services.
Enrique, thank you so much. I know you need to leave and do some work in the community. Thank you for being here today. And Rania, also thank you for joining us. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. Our focus today is urban development. Do you have a story or an idea you want to share? Call in now, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. We're also live tweeting the show. Send us your comments using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We're going to go to a quick break. We'll be right back.
This year marks the 100th Crow Fair in Montana. It's one of the largest and longest-running powwows in the country. It draws thousands of dancers and spectators to the Apsalaga Nation for 4 days of cultural and community celebration. We're getting a preview on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
The 2019 models are out this month. Thinking of getting a new or newer vehicle? If yours isn't worth as much as a trade, think about donating it instead to KUNM. You get a great feeling, and if you itemize, a sizable tax deduction. What you don't get is the expense of fixing it or the headache of trying to sell it outright. Even if it's not running, we will tow it. No worries. Go to KUNM.org and under support, click Donate Your Vehicle or call 888-KUNM-CAR.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Sarah Gustavus, and we are discussing today urban development in cities, and what a healthy community looks like, what changes would be positive for different neighborhoods. You can join the conversation by calling 277-5866. Let's go now to Romero in Albuquerque. I'm sorry, Romeo. Romeo in Albuquerque, welcome. What's your comment today?
Hi. Well, you know, as a person that grew up in the International District, you know, it was when I was growing up there, and going to Van Buren Middle School up there on Louisiana, it was known as something else. But what's kind of cool is there's a rugby field there already, and I'm a huge rugby fan. I'll be, full disclosure. But in Glendale, Colorado, their government embraced rugby. They built a stadium that's specifically used for rugby. And they also embrace the legalization of marijuana. And I'm thinking that would be an economic, boom for that area. There's already a rugby pitch there. You could build a stadium around it like they did in Glendale. And they also use that stadium, like the weight room that the players train in. They use it for a rec center for the community. There's also a convention center that people can have events there, or they can rent it out for, corporate events or whatever. And there's also around the stadium, you have the dispensaries, So, you know, there's jobs around for everyone. And I'm thinking if they did that somewhere like the international zone, you can get preference to the local residents first, and then the gentrification won't leave them behind. So I'm all for bettering a neighborhood.
Interesting.
Because it's affordable, or doesn't mean it has to be riddled with needles or gang violence. That's my take on it. And you legalize the pot, then, you know, that takes one drug out of the equation. So,
Romeo, thank you for your call today and sharing your thoughts about how you think we can improve neighborhoods like the International District. Dan Majewski, multi-use, mixed use, kind of where there's lots of things going on in an area. That seems like that's an opportunity.
Yeah, you're talking about mixed-use development?
Yeah, mixed-use development, where there'd be multiple things that a community could, people could interact with a space, a particular block, you know, if there's a lot going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's worth reflecting on the fact that all of human civilization, pretty much up until about 100 years ago, mixed-use was the norm. If you look at neighborhoods like Borelis and Old Town, it was very common for stores and housing to be all in the same building. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of well-intentioned regulations that have prevented that from happening for a lot of years. I think our regulations are moving in the right direction in some ways to allow for that choice, the diversity of uses. The city of Albuquerque recently just passed a new zoning code called the Integrated Development Ordinance, and it attempts to address some of these issues of, you know, not having enough choice, you know, reducing parking regulations close to major transit corridors like Central, allowing this mix of uses in more parts of the city while still trying to preserve, you know, some of the single family home communities around the city.
Mm-hmm. We have some email comments coming in. Chris says she's a realtor and wants to encourage neighborhoods to be more open to flexible housing, guest houses, accessory dwelling units, co-housing, townhomes, things that some neighborhoods often resist. Eventually, though, she says areas that resist will be overwhelmed by growth around them. Flexible housing and work-live situations have a 300-year history in New Mexico, like family compounds. I've heard that before as well. Marianne says there are so many ill-conceived infill projects. She mentions the luxury condo on Central and Carlisle that dwarfs single-family homes next door. She says she doesn't want to see out-of-scale and just plain ugly projects. Also, Nate emailed us. He says walkability should be central to any development, and so many progressive people fight density and affordable or low-income housing, contradicting their political stances. He says we bend over backwards for outside investment and put up roadblocks for locals. We've heard that this hour of communities wanting control of what happens and what development looks like in their neighborhood. There's still time to call in 277-5866 or email your comments to letstalk@kunm.org. Let's go now to Joy in Albuquerque. Joy, what's your experience?
Yes. I'm new to the city, or fairly new. Just been here 4 years. And I've always lived in small towns, and I'm disabled. I have to get around in a wheelchair. And frankly, I'm terrified at the possibility of leaving where I live by myself. I have a neighbor who was fully physically capable of getting around a couple years ago when she just moved here, just got hit in an intersection as a pedestrian and just a couple blocks away. And I, you know, it's really hard to get around. It seems to me like Albuquerque could get some disabled people together and form a task force or a committee or something, somebody to kind of help focus on things that would help disabled people to move around the city.
That's a really important point, Joy. Thank you so much for calling in today. We also have Paul in Albuquerque. Paul, what do you want to add to the conversation?
Hello?
Welcome, Paul. What do you want to add to our conversation today?
Well, it's a suggestion that rather than a sprawl that we've endured for many, many years, so such as the development of Santa Elena development on top of the West Mesa. We suggest the possibility of, rather than that, to put in a large solar array on the sand dunes that are on top of the mesa. The area is really not very suitable for sort of standard suburban development because of the sand dunes. Some of them are miles long, and they're 10 or 20 feet high. And you'd have to level them to put in houses and things and have problems with foundations. So we suggest a large solar array, about 8,000 acres, that would be available. That's nearly flat in that area and wouldn't have to disturb the soil and could provide enough electricity for the entire city and county of Bernalillo, the city of Albuquerque and county of Bernalillo. So we think it would be a better use, it would be less expensive, and provide a very useful product, electricity, for the community.
Paul, thanks for your call today. Dan, did you want to react to either of those callers?
Yeah, for Joy, there is a disability committee. So the city has a variety of boards and commissions. If you just look up online, City of Albuquerque Boards and Commissions, there is a board that specifically addresses disability access, and there might be available slots if she wants to serve on that and apply. And yeah, regarding Santa Elena, I think anything but what they're proposing would be a great idea.
You know, I wanted to add the Metropolitan Detention Center, right next to it, has an array of solar panels that probably takes care of all their electricity. So I think we got to look at ways to do things like that. So I think that's a great idea. You know, some of this dialogue that's taking place right now has to take place in an inclusive way. You know, I heard inclusive, I heard dialogue, a lot of great ideas when you bring everybody to the table.
Absolutely. Let's go now to Charlie in Albuquerque. Charlie, what comment do you want to add today?
Hello?
Hello.
Yes. I'm calling regarding the over 3,000 abandoned properties in the city of Albuquerque, and would like to see that our state legislature give municipalities the ability to recover those properties. At present time, we have no means of doing so. I'd like to propose a municipal lien recovery act, if possible, and see if we can get the help of the legislature to do that.
Charlie, what would you like to see happen once those abandoned properties are under the control of the city?
They could be sold. If they could, the land itself, if it's empty land, or if it has a house on it, or a business, those properties could be banked by any municipality, whether it's Albuquerque or Las Cruces, or you know, any Class A city. Then after those are able to be sold, they could be sold for perhaps a dollar and a contract to get those back on the market, or they could be used for other purposes.
And I wonder if it came up earlier, this idea of land trusts, mm-hmm. and some of these kind of creative solutions for affordable housing, if it could tie into that conversation as well. We have another comment from by email from Ellen. She says she lives in the International District and she's legally blind, uses a wheelchair, and she says she's seen improvements in the area around Central, but she thinks more needs to be done. I think we're definitely hearing that from people this hour. Deacon Vigil, I wanted to ask you, you're a leader in the Catholic Church. What role do you think faith leaders can take in these discussions about neighborhoods and healthy neighborhoods and bringing community together?
Well, we have to be part of the community. We're already there, so a lot of the people that come to the church are from the community, and so we have to be right there with them in these talks, looking at ways to make the community more viable. you know, I love the idea of being able to have a walkable community. We used to. We used to way back as a kid, and that has gone out the window. But I think it has we have an opportunity here to bring that back. And so churches, businesses, developers, all of us have to sit at the table together, you know, for what's right. You know, people with disabilities should not have to stay in their homes because they can't go out or are afraid to go out. But the church can be a voice for that.
Dan, I saw you nodding as well on that.
Yeah, I agree. Everyone needs to be at the table. I mean, that's the real challenge. It's really challenging to get everyone at the table. I want to respond briefly to what one of the callers mentioned about vacant and abandoned property, which I know is a challenge in parts of Borelis as well. I think it gets back to what Renya was saying about, you know, I think one of the challenges is a lot of these abandoned properties, because of the regulation, because of the zoning. You know, if it's single family, you can only build single family there. But what if you could build a duplex or a triplex? Those are great ways to make housing affordable. If someone can buy a duplex or a triplex, live in one of the units, rent out the other one, then it, you know, pays for the cost of living there. I think we need to be more open-minded and creative about what we can build in our neighborhoods, not be so afraid of the potential for two or three units on a single piece of property. I think I like the term gentle density. I think the term density, people think of high rises, think of, you know, these large scale buildings that, yeah, you can't drop those in the middle of a single family neighborhood. But you could totally put, you know, a duplex or a triplex in a lot of these neighborhoods, and most people wouldn't even know that there were multiple families living in those units. There's great ways to design them that it doesn't look like density, essentially. So
we have one more caller I want to take this hour. Laura in Albuquerque. Laura, what can you add to our conversation today?
You know, I just want to speak to New Mexico as a whole generally tries to look out for the least, so like disabilities and that kind of thing. But we never sort of talk about how we stop this unbridled growth, which includes I can build wherever I want and do whatever I want without taking into account the community that I'm serving. And one of the things is we need to look at, this is in the Bay Area a lot, a dialogue, we need to stop supporting through our pocketbooks corporations and, you know, construction entities and things like that that refuse to do things like rebuilding existing structures. And, you know, part of this dialogue is it's important to examine from a sort of utopian point of view what is a society and a model that serves all people instead of just the wealth and the entitled, but also how are we creating more of the wealth and entitled through our purchases, through where we put our funding, through where we're, you know, in Berkeley, there's a whole thing about, let's go and examine all the buildings that are sitting unoccupied that we don't even have to build something again. We just need to refurbish those buildings. And what we need to do is create incentives with construction companies and owners that, you know, there's an incentive to just fix what's already there. There's so much unused property that's already built that could be going towards these causes. But instead, we just hurl money at new development. And so I just think there's also a dialogue about how we as consumers participate in this.
Thank you, Laura, for your call today. I think there's definitely a conversation about how we can do things differently in Albuquerque that meets the unique needs of folks in Albuquerque, folks in New Mexico, and other cities across the state. That's all the time we have today. Thank you to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Twitter or go to KUNM.org where you can leave your comments and share the show with people you know. We also are going to post links to resources in the community in the post for today's show. If you missed part of it, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Celia Rainey screened your calls today. Elaine Baumgartel is the executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.